yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show Alternative Visions, where we talk about solutions, not just the problems. Okay, today we are going to shift our focus to the global scene. At the beginning of the show here, if you've been watching the news, globally, one of the most interesting developments looks like a resurgence of the Egyptian Revolution. Or a growing clash between two fundamental groupings in that revolution started in 2011, truly a democratic revolution, except the large numbers of folks, secularists, let's say, non-religious fundamentalists, who haven't seen very much, if anything, come out of the revolution, and they are mobilizing hundreds of thousands of people in demonstrations here in recent weeks, mobilizing, demanding democracy to be deepened and some economic benefits from the revolution. What did they fight for? Right? And on the other side, we have the religious fundamentalists in the case of the Islamic Brotherhood and their president, Morsi, who's been elected for 1 year now, growing increasingly authoritarian. And we have a lineup growing here between the religious fundamentalists on the one hand and the secularists on the other hand, and the army in between. Or is it? Okay. So special focus today on the Egyptian revolution events in recent days. And this is bound to stay in the news here for the coming days and weeks, and we will see how it develops. Democratic revolution launched 2 years ago in 2011. Is it going to move to a higher stage as millions throughout the country, secularists, challenge the religious fundamentalist leadership in Morsi, growing increasingly arrogant, and the Islamic Brotherhood, of which he is the leader, okay? Is there an attempt to establish a kind of conservative religious fundamentalist state there that folks are resisting? It's not unlike some parallels going on in Turkey, is it? Turkey and Turkey and Egypt. Two developments, new developments going on there in ways unlike the first wave of the revolutions in the Middle East. How are these two different? Well, we're just going to talk about Egypt here today and the growing clashes between what appears to be workers' unionist youth demanding more political and economic rights and benefits and the religious fundamentalist movement led by Morsi, right? And then there's the army threatening to intervene. Are they trying to force more cooperation between these two wings? After all, it appears Morsi only won the presidency by 51%, not an overwhelming majority. The army's calling for a new roadmap, cooperation between the two forces, Morsi and the secularists, right? What will Morsi and the fundamentalists do? It appears hundreds of thousands of Islamic Brotherhood supporters are now being mobilized by Morsi. Will they confront the hundreds of thousands of demonstrators and protesters who have been increasing and growing in their efforts in the past week, particularly since last Friday, June 30th? Some key questions. What are the demands of the rising progressive secularist forces? What is the army threatening and saying it will do? What are the responses now of the Islamic Brotherhood and President Morsi? What may be the outcomes just days ahead? Well, we have a guest here, a special guest, who I think is one of the real experts on this topic. He's not an academic, but someone who was there at the first revolution in 2011, went back again last year, and if anyone can tell us what are the political forces aligned and where are they going, it's Carl Fenimore. By the way, Carl, are you there? Nope, Carl's not here yet. Well, okay, I'll have to keep talking about this topic then. He has an article in Counterpunch called Turning Up the Heat in Egypt. I'm going to publish this on my blog as well, jackrasmus.com. It appeared today in the article Counterpunch. Not an article, excuse me, in the blog Counterpunch. Some of you may have heard of counterpunch.org and some other places. I will publish this on my blog, jackrasmus.com. Okay. And I believe Carl will have it on his blog as well. I'm not sure what that is. When he comes on here, we'll talk about this a little bit. Okay. And some key questions, which I'll be asking Carl, is there a secular versus Islamic punch-up coming in Egypt? Carl has talked about this new youth movement and general movement called the Tamarod Movement, T-A-M-A-R-O-D, which has been developing some new tactics and playing a key role in the protests here. And we'll ask him to explain that in some detail, which he has in the past talked about in his articles, right? What is the Tamarod Movement and the June 30th protests? Okay. We'll ask him, doesn't Morsi, elected president, have a right to implement some of these things? We'll see what the view is on that. What has Morsi been doing over the past year as he drifts more towards an authoritarian type of ruling here? And what will that mean is the key question. Has that been the cause of the rebellions going on? What's the role of the youth and of unions and workers in this secular revival, you might call it? Is the army really threatening to invade, or isn't it? What's been Morsi's response? What are the assemblies of the people going on there? Okay, what's the U.S. role in all of this? We know the Egyptian economy is in big trouble, getting worse. And we know there's been a lot of loans from the West in the banks in the U.S. Over the past 2 years. Are these at risk, and is the U.S. therefore intervening behind the scenes through the army? What's going on here? Of course, you know the U.S. has a presence there, the gray imminence in the background, always. Okay, and what needs to be done? What needs to be done? Any lessons for democratic progressives in the U.S. is an important question. Okay, and after we talk with Carl, we will keep our focus on the global economic update. As you know, on the June 12th show here, I gave my predictions for the U.S. and the global economy for the next 18 months. Anyone interested in that, go back and check it out. Listen to the show. Every 12-18 months, I give specific forecasts. Track record's been pretty good so far, and of course, I'm on the bearish side, as they would say, saying that the global economy is not such good shape, contrary to what you hear from the U.S. press and politicians. Well, my article just appeared in Z Magazine here this week, entitled Predicting the U.S. and Global Economy. So check out Z Magazine, July 2013 issue. And you can also go to my website, and you'll be able to read the full article on my website, Predicting the U.S. and Global Economy. And that website is www.kyklosproductions.com, K-Y-K-L-O-S, productions, plural, .com. And click on the Articles tab, and you'll be able to read the full thing there. And as I said, the podcast of my June 12th show here on Progressive Radio Network, Alternative Visions, talks about the forecast as well. So you can get an audio version, or you can read the print version. Also related to this is my also just published article in Against the Current magazine, another magazine coming up here called Austerity American Style, From Grand Bargain to Grand Collusion. That will also be up on my website, Kikilos Productions. So check out those two websites if you want to read those in detail. And they're related to this question of the U.S. and global economy. We'll turn to that later on. And we'll talk about specifically later on an update at mid-year of what's going on economically in China. Why is China slowing down? What's the prospects for that? What will that mean for the global economy? And we'll talk about Japan, which is beginning to perk up a little bit. Is that sustainable? What are the risks and the disruptions as a result of Japan's new economic policies patterns almost perfectly after the U.S. Federal Reserve? And then we'll talk about the latest data from the Eurozone. So the global focus will be China, Japan, and the Eurozone. But we'll take that up in the second half of this program. Okay. First, we want to talk about what's going on in Egypt. And I think my guest is still late. I don't think he's on yet. So what we're going to do is see where he is. We're going to take a little break here, listen to some Bruce Springsteen, and I'm going to see where my guest Carl is. I'm going to try to make a quick call to Carl and see what's going on. I think you'll really want to hear what he has to say. So let's take an early break for a couple minutes here and see if I can get Carl Fenimore, our expert, eyewitness expert on Egypt, back on this line.
Sometimes tomorrow comes soaked in treasure and blood. Here we stood the job.
This is your host, Jack Rasmus, show Alternative Visions, and the topic today is Egyptian Revolution Redux, Revisited. Are we moving to a new stage here with recent events in the revolution in Egypt? My guest, Carl Fenimore. I believe Carl is now online. Carl, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jack.
Very good, very good. Well, Carl, let me just give you a little overview of what I've introduced and talked about here. What are the key questions of what's going on there, which may be framed perhaps as a start for you, is what are the demands of the rising progressive secularist forces? What is the army in Egypt threatening, saying it will do? What are the responses of the Islamic Brotherhood and President Morsi? And what may we expect in possible outcomes in the days ahead? I mentioned your great article, which is now available on Counterpunch, Turning Up the Heat in Egypt. And I also mentioned to the audience that I don't do this very often, but I thought that article was so good, I'm going to also post it on my blog. So jackrasmus.com, folks, or go to counterpunch.org or go to my jackrasmus.com, and you will be able to read Carl's article there. And I believe, Carl, you have a blog where you're going to put it up, or it is up. Just give us the
It's Carl Fenimore at wordpress.org.
Okay, and Carl Fenimore, spelled FINAMORE. Carl, CARL. Carl Fenimore at WordPress.org. Okay, other great articles by Carl there. And as I said, introducing here at the show today, I don't think there's anyone around who has a deeper, more sophisticated analysis of the Egyptian Revolution than Carl has. Carl, having been a eyewitness there as the revolution broke out 2 years ago, went back again last year when Morsi got elected, and of course been following it ever since, and his analysis is really great. So, Carl, I'm going to let you talk, and I hope you can stay on as long as your time permits. I know you have to leave a little earlier, but as long as you can, please do tell us. Jump in wherever you think necessary, but tell us, what are the demands and why this new confrontation and the Tamarod movement you mentioned in your article, and the army, and where are things going to go?
Okay, well, I'm glued right now to Omron Online on my computer. That's the state-run but largest daily in Egypt, and I've got RT Television, Russia Today, eyewitness reports from Cairo on the TV. So I'm squeezed between these two screens right here, waiting for things as millions and millions of people in Egypt are waiting. What will the outcome be of this most significant mobilization in the history of Egypt, perhaps since 1919, when there were similar mass mobilizations that ousted the British? Remember, the British were ousted and finally granted independence to Egypt, 1922. Aside from that, this is unprecedented. Google did aerial studies of the photographs. I've heard estimates of up to 33 million people in the streets of Egypt in a country of 84 million. They have submitted petitions calling for the ouster of Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood government and the call for early elections and for a number of other demands of justice for the concerns of the original revolution, which were economic, social, political demands, which we can go into later. These petitions have gathered 22 million people. And why that is so important is that this represents a change in strategy of the opposition movement. What you're just seeing is the result. For this year, like when I was in Egypt, this January and February, for the anniversary of the toppling of Mubarak, Tahrir Square was filled with tear gas from morning, noon, and night. The tear gas began around 3 a.m. by the police to ward off people from ever entering. And so the police harassment of protests this year increased people's fears and anxieties. The demonstrations were smaller. There was therefore a shift in the movement's strategy. Now, this police repression, sponsored by the United States and Saudi Arabia, has worked in Jordan, Yemen, and Bahrain. But it has not worked in Egypt, because these young radical youth wing of the opposition, the originators of the revolution in January of 2011, this youth wing said, what we have to do is change gears. We can't just concentrate on having demonstrations. We've got to go right to the people, to the work sites, to the schools, to the plazas, to the squares, and we have to begin conversations of why we oppose Morsi, why we oppose the Muslim Brotherhood, and why nothing has been done to alleviate the problems of Mubarak.
Well, who is in this opposition, Carl? What's the composition of the opposition? You mentioned the youth there. Describe it for
us. As you can imagine, it's very varied. It's widely divergent. There is a radical youth wing, which subscribes to the original goals of the revolution, which is to have full democracy, full rights for women, full labor rights. The International Labor Organization still has Egypt on the list of concern because their constitution does not recognize strikes. It does not recognize independent unions. You have to go through a law. It's falling way behind, not recognizing adequate minimum wages. It's Morsi is Mubarak with a beard. That's the common thing. Nothing has changed. However, you have people who are part of the remnants of the Mubarak regime who are opposed to Morsi. They're in this mix. You've got people who would just be willing to share power, who are part of the privileged class, who just understand that democracy, you must have democracy. You can't antagonize the population so much. So this business, reform-minded business class is part of the opposition. They have very well-educated academics representing them, former ministers of the Mubarak regime who were not tainted so much with being part of Mubarak, and now they've got a cleansed democratic image. And then you've got the independent unions who are fighting every day for their very existence. Remember, it was the biggest general strike wave in Egyptian history that brought down Mubarak. That's little publicized, but that happened 5 to 6 days before Mubarak resigned, the greatest strike wave in 15 different cities that ever occurred in Egypt. And that's what the student wing, a radical wing, is calling for now, is a possible general strike, because they're harking back to an understanding that that's what happened to bring down Mubarak. So that when Morsi goes, or if he goes, the vacuum will be filled by the army in trying to patch together some coalition of the remnants I just talked about. It will only be, believe me, only be a change in complexion. It will not be a substantial change in government led by the army, because the army is part of the problem. It owns up to 35% of the economy, and that's what's real business. It just doesn't want to be center stage. It wants to be behind the scenes to conduct that business, which the Constitution, the new Constitution, says cannot be inquired about. They're state secrets, their ownership.
Something, Carl. If the army is really a big wing of the capitalist class there in Egypt, and we know the West and the banks have loaned a lot of money, pending also loans to Egypt, and the Egyptian economy is collapsing, do you see kind of a pressure from Obama through the army to try to somehow check the Islamic Brotherhood or stabilize the situation? What's the role of the army and its connections to the Obama administration and all this?
Well, the army, of course, receives $1.3 billion from the administration, and the administration agrees that the army really, they don't want the army, nor does the army want to be center stage. They'd hope the Muslim Brotherhood, by having getting elected by 51%, 1 year ago, would seal the deal. But the Muslim Brotherhood rapidly just was interested in consolidating its own power, did not enact any reforms, enacted policies which made it worse for workers, for labor people. Inflation is up. Tourism is still down. A third of the workers have been laid off. And they've introduced more extreme Islamic influences to the detriment of women. So all the expectations of liberty, justice, democracy have been crushed. And that's why this broad coalition around those very broad sentiments has materialized right now. The army's role is to patch together some cosmetic changes that definitely must still have an Islamist flavor, so that the head Islamic cleric in Egypt is part of the discussions, the Tamarad representatives of the rebel movement who are leading this latest demonstrations, they're part of it, the former Mubarak people under a new name, they're part of it. So the very broad forces, they want to patch together. But I'm telling you, this new construct will destruct, as my article points out, because it will fail to address the major problems which the United States, through its International Monetary Fund and World Bank, is demanding. And that is that you cut further the food and fuel subsidies to the people, and you use the loans that we want to give you to pay back the bank debts to the European and U.S. banks that Mubarak dictatorship ran up. And that is absolutely unacceptable. And open speculation in the Egyptian papers is this will provoke a revolution of the hungry. So if you any regime that accepts these IMF loans, these onerous stipulations, I don't care what its complexion, its new complexion, it will suffer the same fate as the army did. The army was greeted as liberators after Mubarak. They ran the show for a year. They were totally repudiated. They had to get off the throne quick because they jailed more people and killed more people in that 1 year than Mubarak's 29-year emergency rule.
Well, it has,
and the same in the Muslim Brotherhood. It's only taken 1 year for their veneer to wear off.
Question for you. As President Morsi and the Brotherhood, you know, they're elected. They're in formal position of power. Have they been implementing the U.S. and the bank's policies? And is it really those policies that are really causing people to enter the streets again? Or is it something other that Morsi and the Brotherhood are doing in terms of democratic and liberty restrictions? What's brought all these people into the street? Is it these economic policies, or is it political policies by Morsi?
No regime, neither the army before it, of course Mubarak, but nothing that has happened since Mubarak has addressed the real economic problems, because to do so you have to challenge the grip of foreign investors and foreign business. You have to stop the denationalizing of state property into private hands. You have to stop the emphasis on imports and try to get the domestic industries going again. And you have to respect human rights to do all this. You can't be repressing people who are rebelling against your onerous policies. So it all starts with the policies. The Muslim Brotherhood, in Professor Joel Bainin's opinion, in my opinion, the foremost Egyptologist from Stanford, has said that they are more Milton Friedman, neoliberal economics people who favor that view of privatization and everything else than anybody. They're ardent followers of the West, ironically. It seems ironic. They've been an instrument of the British to stop Arab nationalism since they were founded in 1920. They were opposed to Nasser's pan-Arabism. They've been repressed back and forth by the regimes throughout their history, but they're political. They've always been a staunch political ally of the U.S., and of the British throughout the history of the 20th century. And
are you describing, Carl, are you describing the Islamic Brotherhood and Morsi's economic program when you describe this pro-Milton Friedman, pro-Western banks? Is that what you're their program, economic?
Morsi completely endorses the Western approach to solve the problems, but he just has been unable to take the loan from the IMF under the conditions that I described, because he knew it would set off a wave of protest. But he completely opposes, he does not support an increase in the minimum wage. The government did not do it. It was a court that raised the minimum wage. He does not respect trade unions. He refuses to recognize independent trade unions. He wants only the old Mubarak trade union to exist, only he has staffed it with Muslim Brotherhood people. So he does not have any economic policy. His economic policy is the Muslim Islamist. He cites the Islamic teachings that you should have charity for the poor. So he has charity boxes at all the businesses, Islamist businesses, that you can drop money in. But no government social programs do they advocate. Now, they advocate charity, as I said, they have done for 70 years, charity in the communities admirably, which has earned them tremendous respect. That's where their base comes from, in the poor neighborhoods. They've done extensive charity. But when you're running a country, people don't want charity, they want jobs. They want government social programs. And they, Muslim Brotherhood is not doing that.
Well, how about the political program of Morsi over the last year? The impression is he's been growing increasingly authoritarian. Can you comment on that?
Oh, yes. Well, he has, when he came to power, he said, I'm going to be open and tolerate everyone's views. But it's been the opposite. He's, as I had said, in the trade union, the official trade union, he kicked out all the Mubarak supporters and put Muslim Brotherhood people on the commission of to write a new constitution. A majority was of appointees. Of the 90 appointees, 70 were Islamists appointed by Morsi. So he's allowed the secret police to reorganize. He has not reformed the secret police. They have a new name now. But that's all. They're still 1 million strong. And he's allowed them in the last year to crush demonstrations to, as I described this last February, the tear gas everywhere greeted protesters in Tahrir.
1 million. That's not, that's comparable to if we had 4 million FBI agents in the U.S., huh?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
police state.
They are retrograde. They don't even like the Muslim Brotherhood, the secret police, nor does the army, really. They tolerated them. They want to have, you know, go back to Mubarak if they had their ways. That's the secret police. They're still backward retrograde. The army is far more sophisticated under the direct tutelage of the U.S. who advises them. And they've been quite tactically smart. For instance, they really want this 48 hours to be used to convince Morsi to accept more coalition partners. That would be the best deal. Keep the Muslim Brotherhood in so you have their millions of supporters appeased. In short of that, though, he has to go. He has to go. His position has been so far, this is a coup, I'm not leaving, and I'll talk to people, but I'm not going to have any coalition. So he's been intransigent. That could change at any moment when he's faced with the reality. They will replace him with other Islamic elements to appease and disarm politically those who think this is just an assault on Islam. It's not an assault on Islam. It's an assault on a leader and a brotherhood politicians who have, for the reasons I've described, completely antagonized the population who still, as their petition says, we are following the tutelage of the United States far too much. We have no jobs. Inflation is terrible. You have to solve these economic problems where 40% live on $2 a day, according to the World Bank. People have to work 2 and 3 jobs. Doctors were telling me that in my interviews. Inflation has, when I said $2 a day, I said, how do people live on that? He said it's less than $2 a day because of inflation. And many workers who work overseas, hundreds of thousands, if not a few million Egyptians, leave the country to work overseas. The Arab surrounding Arab countries have sealed off the borders in some cases because they're suffering their own problems.
You know, if you read the international press in the last few days, it appears as if Morsi is mobilizing his own Brotherhood forces, hundreds of thousands, and preparing for open street clashes. What do you think about that? Is that the picture?
That's, you know, by the way, I should say, regarding the army, there is an important, while most people overwhelmingly would be reconciled. I'd use the word not welcome, but reconciled. Some would welcome, but most would be reconciled to the army just to get rid of Mubarak. While that's true, there is an important opposition of the youth wing that remembers what the army did in the year that they ran, had power. So there is opposition to them, and the army itself, for the reasons I said, really wants to stay in the background. So what they're going to do is try to patch together some coalition that has to appease, as I said, the cosmetic coloring of this new government has to appease the millions of Morsi supporters. Otherwise, there will be trouble. There will be a civil war. So to avoid that, if anybody interprets it as an anti-Islamic move. So to do that, that's why in the discussions today were sections of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's a mass organization, the Muslim Brotherhood. Its party, it's often confused with its party. Its party is the one in government, the Freedom and Justice Party, much smaller. Middle-class elements like Morsi, who is just shy of a millionaire, and the top aide, his top aide, who is a millionaire, who ran for president, who wanted to be the one to run for president, but for various reasons, legal reasons, couldn't. He was out of the country and so forth. But so they really wanted to run their millionaires. So the Freedom and Justice Party is really the thing we're talking about. The Muslim Brotherhood can be appeased by bringing some clerics in or other ways. Believe me, if they're going to put a new government in, it's going to have a sufficient enough Islamic face to appease those who believe it is about getting rid of the Islamists. But as my, we've got to remember, Egypt is overwhelmingly Muslim. And as people I interviewed said, look, we are the protesters. We're overwhelmingly Muslim. It's not that Morsi is a Muslim. It's about what he's done to the country that we're concerned about. So to pose this as the Western press does, your listeners should be forewarned, it's not secular versus Islam. It's about who's going to provide real genuine democracy and real genuine economic reforms. And unless and until you really have economic reforms and provide jobs and put money back into the pockets of people instead of into paying off the banks and the debts to the European and U.S. banks, until you do that, you will have protests. You can never have democracy because they're going to have to suppress the protesters, as they've been doing for 2 years. And what makes Egypt different from all the other Arab countries, I talked about the repression that has worked temporarily in Yemen, Bahrain, and Jordan, and the fake reform Islamist governments in Tunisia and in Morocco. There is no such, which had the support of the people, these governments. They appeared, they had a rough reform face. None of that has worked in Egypt because when Mubarak fell, every institution that he had a grip on, all the courts, all the local municipal committees, both houses of parliament, his huge mass party, his huge union, his secret police, they were all dispersed, scattered, and shattered. Only to be, you know, resurrected in the case of the secret police. But the other elements still have no, there's no institutions that the Egyptian people believe in since Mubarak. There's none authoritative one. And the independent unions, which are 2 to 3 million and not that well organized because they haven't been legally recognized, have great legitimacy, but they have not had a national presence because they have a big presence in every one of the work sites, but not national political presence because they haven't been afforded the opportunity, the rights, the training, the experience in the last 2 years just to all of a sudden become a mass political force. But neither has that political force been filled with any genuine sector that has offered real reforms.
Well, let me ask you a devil's advocate question here, and that is, wasn't Morsi elected president last year? Doesn't he have the right to implement programs that he has called for? What do you say to that?
Well, legally, he does absolutely have the right. He's got 3 more years. He was elected legitimately in the first elections in Europe, in Egyptian history. So, yeah, he does have that right, and that's what he's claiming, that this is a coup. But this is a revolutionary type situation where the powers that be cannot, including the United States, they're never big on legalities, you know, themselves. They sponsor coups all the time. They're looking at 33 million people in the streets and saying, we got to get rid of this guy, just like a tin horn dictators they get rid of all the time, Mubarak or you know, one of the many other examples in Latin America. But the people are not hung up on this legitimacy because they say the way he's acted, where he, as soon as he got into power, he said every one of his executive orders will not be subject to court review. That was one of the first edicts he made. Anything I do cannot be challenged by the Supreme Court or any other. That inflamed and infuriated the population for the last 9 months, and finally it's catching up to him because he's done nothing to reverse that.
So he's been ruling
the legality has been superseded by his arrogance and abuse of powers.
Can you give us other examples of that abuse of power? Can you give us other examples?
I can't hear you.
Can you give us other such examples of Morsi's abuse of power over the last year?
Yeah. You know, when you talk, for some reason, there's a lot of static. Do you hear static when I talk?
No, I think you may have a poor connection. Mine's fine.
Oh, okay. So give me that again, the question.
The question was, can you give us examples of Morsi's abuse, alleged abuse of power over the past year that has inflamed the populace?
Well, he, as I said, very important constituent assembly to write a new constitution. He totally stuffed the body, I believe it was about 90, with 70 of his supporters. So it forced mass resignations of the other 20. You know, they said, what the heck is this? This is a charade. He did not make any appointments of any of the opposition people from the other business classes, even. He stacked it with Salafists, extreme Orthodox Islamists, and other Muslim Brotherhood people. So it was, and then he did not recognize women's rights in the Constitution at all. As a matter of fact, he introduced a worse version that Mubarak had of Sharia law, which is still the foundation in one sense, you know, it is written still the foundation of the Constitution. So in his he did not recognize, he tried to take over the state trade union, as I said, that's 3 million. That's Mubarak's old union. He kicked out all the other people who were over 60 years of age, which, of course, all the leaders were. You couldn't be over 60 and have office in that union. Of course, almost all of them were, and they kicked them all out, and he appointed his own people with that trade union at the detriment of independent unions who have no legality. Those are pretty fundamental right there. And then he just did not, you know, the secret police have come back in full force, with new equipment. And when I was there in February, absolutely, the tear gas I picked up was made in Philadelphia. Their uniforms, their new Jeeps, armored cars, helmets, boots, everything had made USA stamped all over it with their $1.3 billion. So he's allowed that, and they've been very, very abusive. So...
And what about economically? What has he done economically or not done that has infuriated the populace?
Well, that's the whole point. He's done nothing economically. It's just all been downhill. There's still the tourism is still down 20%. Of course, a third of the third of people are employed one way or another through tourism, and they're a big part of the one third of the workforce that has been laid off in the last 2 years. So, you know, he's and then the fuel. There's now shortages, electrical shortages, power shortages, because the money that the government takes in is being used to pay off Mubarak's debt. We don't know. I don't know what portion of it is. These are not. Much of the budget is still state secrets, like the Army's role, which owns so much, up to 30%. Academics and diplomats estimate. Again, it's a guess because it's state secrets. But we do know what's on the ground. The people are having gas shortages, and they use natural gas, diesel, to heat their stoves. Well, there's shortages there. There's shortages in the electricity, power outages. There's lack of bread. He floated the idea to cut the amount of bread. He claims there's a lot of fraud with the ration cards. The Egyptian people are allowed up to 7 of the small loaves of bread a day. They live on that. That's how they live on $2 a day. They buy these 7 loaves for pennies and feed their family. So the lack of education, because now everyone has to be a street vendor. You can't have your kids go to school. They have to go help you sell fruits, vegetables, Kleenex, candy, whatever you can on the street.
Well, so, you know, with a third laid off, it sounds like there's a depression in Egypt. Economic depression.
There is. It's worse than before. But this is true of a lot of the Middle East. $2 a day is a figure which can be applied to a lot of people. But the minimum wage, not to raise that above $80 a month, it's a scandal. The parliament, which was for 1 year has been around, the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamist-dominated parliament, has been around. For 1 year, they did nothing on that, Jack. Nothing on the minimum wage. Nothing on women's rights. The rape, the anti-rape law that was put into practice was from the court. The minimum wage was a result of independent unions going to court. A court raised the minimum wage from something like $39 a month to $80 a month.
sounds to me like the economic program of the Islamic Brotherhood and Morsi over the past year has been pretty much the program of the Western banks.
Exactly.
In exchange for loans. I haven't heard you said anything that sounds progressive in any way. And then overlaid on that, you've got the political repression that's continued and authoritarian attitude of Morsi. Well, no wonder people are in the streets.
Well, that's exactly
thousands
the
again.
Point. That's why it's very popular and I think kind of vivid what the Kamerad or rebel protesters who put out these petitions to start conversations outside of the squares and plazas where they would be attacked, but in homes, in workplaces, start conversations, sign the petition to get rid of Morsi, have early elections, and have genuine democracy. They describe it as Morsi is Mubarak only with a beard.
So the petitions are petitions for his removal? Is that the essence of the petitions?
Yeah, in my article I quote the actual petition.
Okay.
And it has the introduction is get rid of Morsi and have have early presidential and parliamentary elections. He's illegitimate, and to recognize the goals of the original February 2011 revolution. You know, a vague stipulation.
What else are the progressive forces here, the popular forces, asking for in terms of economic and political demands? Can you summarize those for us?
Well, increase the minimum wage, double what it is, you know, $200 a month, minimum wage as a beginning. And then all the people, millions of people, want the freedom to be recognized, the right of association, like the International Labor Organization standards that Egypt is violating. Just give us the freedom to have offices, to have legitimate recognition at the workplace and by the authorities. Give us the right to strike, and we'll take care of it. You know, we'll get our raises done. You see, there were approximately 2,000 strikes or work stoppages of some sort, according to independent counters from NGOs, non-government organizations, last year. Workers are winning wage demands at the local factory or workplace or hospitals or bus companies, teachers. They're striking, they're having protests, and the local authorities, the owners, are conceding on the local level, much like in China. China, there's thousands of work stoppages every year, but if you take this to a national, but they're not recognized nationally. If you take it to a national level, then you got to confront the army, the police.
Mm.
So if you give them democratic rights to organize and peacefully assemble and to hold, you know, their civil disobedience, whatever it takes, peaceful stuff, you just give them the democratic rights that the International Labor Organization recognizes, the working class will take care of itself. You know, with its demands. But the most immediate demand is to have, double the minimum wage and to increase subsidies. Do not cut the subsidies for fuel and for food.
Sounds like very fundamental economic demands.
Yeah, really, they want democratic structures so that they can further articulate these demands and make them more concrete. Right now, there's no one concrete one, except that this government, nor the previous one of the army, has made any reforms to help us whatsoever. It's just the same. And if you stay the same under this environment of violence, it's going to all get worse, which it has, because tourists stop coming, you know, and that drains the treasury, which is still sending money to banks.
Well, what's your prediction of what's going to happen over the next days, maybe weeks at the most? What is Morsi and the Brotherhood going to do? What's the army going to do? What do you think the Democratic forces are going to do? What's your scenario or scenarios?
It seems to me that there absolutely must be soon, today or tomorrow, some coalition which from the point of view of the power structure, hopefully the Muslim Brotherhood, Morsi, may even be a part of. But failing that, because he's such a hot figure, despised figure right now. It'll likely be minus him, because, you know, which, by the way, he and the millionaire, his aide, the millionaire businessman, have they're not allowed to leave the country. That's how hated they are. The army has said they're not allowed to leave the country, which is always a suspicion that, well, maybe they're going to be held accountable for some crimes that have not been disclosed yet beyond the violations of basic human rights and democracy I spoke of. But there's going to be a coalition. It must have Islamic elements in it, as I said, to appease the population. It'll have maybe one person in the army, but the army will not be in direct control except in the background.
Do you think Morsi will agree to that? Do you think Morsi will agree to that after all?
No, he won't agree. I don't think. Well, he's had 48 hours to agree, and up until 20 minutes ago, he was still. He was going to agree, the daily newspaper in Egypt says, according to their sources, but he talked to the Muslim Brotherhood and leadership, and they told him not to. So he's holding strong. The top leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, Freedom and Justice Party, are holding strong. I think they want to go down maybe as martyrs. Maybe they think that'll help them get more leverage, whatever they're angling for. But the Muslim Brotherhood has got to be part of this new coalition, or there could be big problems. However, I should tell you, the Muslim Brotherhood has been outlawed for much of its history. You know, they were resurrected the guy who followed Nasser, the prime minister, the president who followed Nasser in the 70s, when he took over, he used the Muslim Brotherhood to attack all the Marxists, all the trade unionists, all the academics, all the socialists, because he wanted to get rid of Arab nationalism, and that's what he did. He used the Salafists to attack these infidels.
Sadat.
And he went on a giant denationalization campaign, denationalizing, and he said, "Look, we're not Arabs." You know, he rejected the Arab unity of Nasser, and he said, "We are Muslims." So he established a Muslim identity from the 1979, made peace with Israel, and set off the attacks on the Catholic Coptics, Christian Coptics, for the first time in Egyptian history. And the Muslim Brotherhood was used for that, and then they were outlawed, and they were not needed. So they go back and forth in history to be used. They've never challenged, as I said, economic grip. They just wanted their share of favors.
Doesn't look like to me that Morsi and the Brotherhood are going to budge in terms of a coalition. They have the legitimacy of the election, and I think it looks like they're, and this is just my view, they're going to fight it out in the streets with the secularists and hope that the army doesn't intervene. What do you think of that scenario?
Well, the army is always going to be the power in the background. But they want to stay backstage, so their business stuff doesn't, you know, come under review.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to be subject to criticism of having a coup and all the other stuff. So that's why they want civilians. There'll be someone. Right now they're claiming it'll only be the defense minister, the head of the army, will be in this provisional government. They got to have some technocrats. The appearance is very important. You got to demobilize 33 million people who are opposed to what's going on, and you've got to appease several million disarm them politically, of Morsi supporters. Although he's only been able to mobilize tens of thousands, not millions so far. Because you look at the crowds, they are probably millions of the 33 million are members of the Brotherhood.
Well, it looks like an interesting scenario with Morsi refusing to budge because he thinks he has the legitimacy of an election, and the population demanding some change, political, economic, they're not getting. It looks to me like a real stalemate. And,
it is. It's got to move off
the street
time real quick, because the people can't remain in the streets like that. remember, none of the changes I've discussed so far from the Army or coalition or anything has addressed the fundamental reason people are on the streets. And the fundamental reason is not religion, but economics.
Well, let's end it at that. I think you're absolutely correct, Carl. Thank you for your excellent update. Once again, read Carl's article, Turning Up the Heat in Egypt, in Counterpunch, or on my website, my blog, jackrasmus.com, also at his website, Carl Finamore, spelled CarlFinamore at WordPress.org, for the update. Follow his articles. I'm sure events will require you to follow up and elaborate. And next week we will talk about the second part of this global update here. I'll be talking about where is China, Japan, and the Eurozone economically at mid-year. Join us next week. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Thank you again, Carl. We'll be talking to you again, I'm sure, in subsequent weeks.
See from you. Okay, bye.